SBC, the Swiss Broadcasting Corporation, presents Musica Helvetica, featuring today a portrait of the Swiss-American composer Ernest Bloch.
The prelude from his suite for violin, played by Roberto Savitzky, has introduced our musical portrait of this truly Swiss-American composer, Ernest Bloch. Born in Geneva, Switzerland, on July 24, 1880, Ernest Bloch lived the greater part of his life in the United States, where he emigrated in 1916. But his formative years he spent in Europe, first studying in Geneva with Émile Jacques Dalcroze, then in Brussels, Frankfurt, Munich, and Paris, before returning to Geneva in 1904. By that time, he had already composed two symphonic poems, a symphony and several songs, and in 1910, his opera Macbeth was premiered at the Opéra Comique in Paris. Upon his arrival in America, Bloch achieved immediate recognition, and his works were soon to receive important prizes. In 1920, he was appointed director of the Cleveland Institute of Music, and 5 years later, of the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. In 1926, he received the Musical America Prize for his epic rhapsody, America, which had the distinction of being premiered simultaneously in 5 American cities. Having returned to Europe in the 30s, he settled first in the southern Swiss region of Ticino. Later, he spent short periods in Paris and New York, and for a while he also lived in the hamlet of Châtel in Upper Savoy in France. The Second World War affected Ernest Bloch so deeply that he did not compose for a while, and he returned to America, where he finally settled for his last years at Agate Beach in Oregon. For several summers, he taught at the University of California at Berkeley, where he was made Professor Emeritus of Music. Struck by an incurable illness, he had to undergo an operation in 1958, but 10 months later, on July 15, 1959, he died in Portland, Oregon. Throughout his entire life, Ernest Bloch remained deeply attached to Switzerland, and in his symphonic work, Helvetia, he paid a lasting tribute to the country of his birth. In California, his daughter Lucienne Bloch Dimitrov, who is a distinguished artist in her own right and a director of the Ernest Bloch Society, fondly recalls the days when her father wrote this work.
I enjoy thinking back to the time when father wrote Helvetia. For a long time, he had expressed the desire to write a symphony that would be like a fresco, a panorama of all that he loved best about his native land. In the summer of 1928, at Grisalp in the Bernese Oberland, the hotel manager found a room in a separate chalet so Father could work in peace. They brought in the piano from the bar, I remember. And so that's where Helvetia was composed. All the songs of his childhood, all the themes he had jotted down for years, found their way into the symphony, which he composed with alacrity and without the slightest concern that his unabashed romanticism was not exactly in the modern vein. Helvetia is an outpouring of his deep love for what he felt was Switzerland's basic quality, its mountains, its down-to-earth people. He was inspired also by his favorite painter, Ferdinand Hodler. Father never failed to take me to see his paintings whenever we were in Switzerland. The memory of that music to me recalls an intense atmosphere of the high Alps, misty, rainy, and Father playing and singing the orchestral part in his very special way on that old, slightly out-of-tune piano.
His Hebrew faith and culture were another important aspect of Ernest Bloch's life, and in many of his works this influence is strongly evident. It reaches sublime heights in his sacred service, Avodat HaKodesh, of which his daughter Lucienne recalls,
"It was again in Griza, 2 years after writing Helvetia, that Father began studying Hebrew to try to interpret the significance of the text of his Sabbath morning service, and weld the words into music. One day, a very stormy day, we were walking in the mountains. He was reciting the Seu Sheorim from the third part of the service, wondering out loud what the words meant. 'Lift up your heads, O ye gates, lift ye everlasting doors, that the King of glory may enter.' Suddenly, the sun pierced through the mist in a most dramatic way. Bloch's face became radiant. He said he now understood what Seu Sheorim meant. Later he explained the passage in this way: 'This I interpreted in the sense of clouds rising high into the sky, and of darkness receding from man's heart, so that the light may enter. I wanted to express the wish that man may free himself from hate, from dark instincts, and all that prevents him from rising above himself and seeing the truth.'" Bloch's relationship to the Jewish religion, his attraction to it was its universal appeal, which is made very clear in the sacred service with its central theme, the unity of all mankind.
Oh.
after hearing those excerpts from public performances in Switzerland of Helvetia and Avodat HaKodesh, let us listen now to Ernest Bloch's second daughter, Suzanne, who teaches at Juilliard Music School in New York. She's a specialist in medieval and Renaissance music, which she also frequently performs in concert, and she's also writing Ernest Bloch's biography. Suzanne Bloch gives us this assessment of her father's position within the music of our time.
My father's favorite quotation was one by Oscar Wilde. "Nothing is so dangerous as being too modern, for one is apt to become old-fashioned quite suddenly." He never tried to be part of the musical trends that came and went during the course of his life. He would never deviate from the direction he had chosen, though he knew that at times he would be completely out of fashion. When in 1903 he conducted two movements of his first symphony, composed at the age of 21 at a festival in Basel, the press castigated him for what was described as his intolerable dissonances and intensity. The great publicity and recognition he received in 1917 after a concert in New York, introducing for the first time what was called his Jewish cycle, put upon him the label of composer of Hebraic music. This he would negate for a time by writing chamber music having nothing to do with his racial heritage. His first piano quintet created much excitement, the impact caused partly by his use of quarter tones. The attention given to this irritated him, and he insisted that all these were just necessary inflections and that he had no more intention of continuing the use of quarter tones than that of inventing new sounds. In 1925, after hearing some of his students proclaim that tonality and form were to be discarded forever, he composed his first concerto grosso to show them that one could still write a tonal, constructed work having vitality and color. 50 years later, this work is still part of the orchestral repertory. Unaffected by the growing trend of atonality, Bloch deliberately continued his course, writing symphonic works such as America and Helvetia, all tonal and unashamedly carrying a message, for he believed that music was a language expressing the highest aspirations of man. In 1945, his second string quartet was composed at the time when he was considered out of the contemporary musical picture. He wrote me about this quartet, saying it was rather dry and would not be liked. Yet, when the work was performed, there was a general exclamation of surprise and acclaim. Bloch was very much alive. He would produce more than 20 orchestral and chamber music works that, near the end of his life, became more detached. In some of these, he occasionally inserted tone rows, but only melodically. Some of this music is not well known. He used to say that it took at least 30 years for some of his works to reach the public. Was he a man of his time? Is it possible to evaluate his music now? If music is to be a mathematical and cerebral organization of sounds, he has no place there. If music is to move and stir, then his place is secure on a high level. I have no doubts as to what the future will decide about the works of my father, Ernest Bloch.
Thank you.
And with the first of two last poems, maybe, his last great work, we close this portrait of Swiss-American composer Ernest Bloch. We'd like to offer our thanks to his two daughters, Lucienne and Suzanne, and to his niece, Evelyn Hirsch, for their kind cooperation.
You've just heard another feature in the Swiss Broadcasting Corporation's transcription series, Musica Helvetica.